No?
Hello. Well, first I want to thank you for listening to this futuristic talk, like Abhay put it. And this is a project that Victor and I worked on a few months ago before I left. And it involves, the Weberian measure parameter and the possibility of having inflation in some natural way. So let's go on. Abhay asked me to first briefly introduce K-inflation. Now, the paper we wrote sort of led us in that way, but it was not a K-inflationary paper, so this is my very poor interpretation of K-inflation. It was a model that was developed by Vukanov and Damour and other people. And the general idea is that you consider an action that's given by the Ricci scalar plus a kinetic term that's a non-canonical kinetic term because you have some field dependence multiplying the kinetic term, plus a quartic term multiplied by another functional of the field. And what they showed is that even when you don't include a potential term in the action here, you can have inflation provided the functions K and L satisfy some conditions. So this is why I wanted to use my computer. I'm afraid all equations are going to be like that, so why don't we try to just use my computer instead? I don't know. It sometimes happens when you... there you go. That makes more sense then. So, well, this is going to avoid other pronouns later, I'm sure, so it's worth the 30 seconds. The idea is that you can make an analogy with a perfect fluid and say, okay, well, if you have an action that looks like that, then what would rho be and what would p be? And you find equations that look like that, and then you have to ask the question, okay, if you write the Friedman equations in terms of the derivatives of rho and, the derivatives of phi and whatnot, what conditions must K and L satisfy such that you get an exponential expansionary solution, exponentially expanding solution? Of course, just because you have that doesn't mean that you have inflation. There's other viability criteria that you have to make sure you satisfy. So these K and L have to take specific forms, and in fact, they have to have different signs and whatnot. So this is a very poor view of what K inflation is, right? Now, the shaky conjecture is the first an observation, right? That in string theory, there's lots of moduli field that you get to play with. Some of them cause trouble due to stabilization issues. But it's remarkable that in loop quantum gravity, that's not really the case. If you have scalar fields, you sort of have to put them more or less by hand. There are no natural scalar fields that arise from a theoretical standpoint. So then it's sort of silly to try to construct inflation just with scalar fields, at least in a loop quantum perspective, because you don't have any to begin with. But what this talk is about is trying to, explore the possibility of promoting a natural constant that arises in loop quantum gravity to a scalar field and see what the dynamics of that theory is and whether or not you can have inflation or some other interesting phenomenon. Now, of course, just because you find a scalar field, because you promoted some constant to a function, doesn't mean that, all of a sudden all your problems are going to be solved. For example, in string theory, even though you have so many scalar fields, it's still really, really difficult to combine it with observational cosmology and inflation in particular and make it agree with, the observations list without really fine-tuning your potential and your specific theoretical scenarios. So I see from an outsider's view, this looks like a way where or a place where Lupkin gravity or Lupkin cosmology could, you know, definitely pull ahead. No. I'm at Princeton, so you can sort of imagine. Right, so now you're going to ask me, well, why are you going to make a constant not a constant? And that's a question you should ask Dickey, I guess. Because as far as I know, he was one of the first people to think about ideas like that, although this dates back from way before him, but at least he formalized. And the idea is that, you know, whenever you have physical theories, you are going to introduce some couplings, and these couplings you assume are constant, and they determine the strength of the interactions in your theory. But it's possible that your theory, the theory you thought was fundamental, or the theory you have right now, is just an effective theory in some sense, and these couplings are not constants, are in fact functions. One such parameter would be the Emirsi parameter, or Barbera-Emirsi parameter. And the idea here is to promote this to a field. And as I was saying, in Brunt's, the classic example is Brunt's Dickey theory, where Newton's gravitational constant is promoted to a function that depends, well, in Brunt's Dickey, just of time. So you get like G dot terms that correct the field equations and whatnot. In generic scalar tensor theories, you can have also spatial events. Okay, so I hope that was sufficient motivation to tell you precisely what we're doing, or we did. So we took the Holst action, so the GR term plus the Holst modification, where gamma bar here is just 1 over the Barbera-Emirsi parameter, BI, that's what I mean by BI. E is the tetrad, F is a strength tensor. These are just wedge products, and of course that's just a levitated tensor. That's right. You will see in the next slide that that's indeed the case, and I'll explain why. So this is a general, I mean, I'm not an expert in loop quantum gravity, but as I'm told that this term is really important when one constructs the theory such that, you know, the Eschenkar variables satisfy a certain set of properties that you want them to have. But in general, this gamma bar is a constant, right? So you, I mean, if you divide this integral, if you just split it into two integrals, then you can just pull it out of the integral and just deal with that piece. And you could, I mean, if you make this a field, of course, then the question arises, well, are you going to give dynamics to the field? Are you going to add a kinetic term for the field, a potential term for the field? Yeah, you could do all those things. I'm not going to talk about them in this paper. We didn't really do it in our paper with Victor, but Simone and Vic are looking at that right now, or in the near future. The general idea is that you take that action, and now you go into, and you know, it's sort of like the Palatine formalism, but in first order form. So you just vary the action with respect to the tetrad, the spin connection, and the field independently. And when you do this with the spin connection, with respect to the spin connection, you essentially get this formula. This is just the general relativistic term. T stands for torsion, or the torsion tensor. This term is a term that arises when you vary this term, there's two terms that arise. One, due to the, both come from the variation of this piece, but this piece can be integrated by parts, and when you do that, then you pick up derivatives of the Barbera-Emirsi field. So this is the term that arises when gamma is a constant always, and this is the new term. Now one can show, and you, when this term is not there, these two terms can be combined, and you recover the torsion free condition of general relativity, which essentially is just saying that due to the Bianchi identities, a term like this, when gamma is a constant, will not contribute to the equations of motion. The theory will be parity preserving. But you have now a right-hand side, so now you cannot force the torsion to be zero anymore. You have to solve this condition. So you stare at it, and you solve it, using some tricks by Perez and Rovelli and by Friedel and others. And you find something that sort of looks like this. You find a funny structure in front of the torsion tensor. Find a levitivita tensor that sort of indicates that maybe there's some sort of parity violation arising here. And, of course, it depends on derivatives of this Emirsi field. And obviously, as you take gamma bar to a constant, then you recover GR.
So you take GR is 0, that's GR.
In GR, the torsion tensor is 0 because gamma is a constant. So for any constant, this reduces to GR. Yes? Okay. So now you have a solution for the torsion tensor, for the torsion condition. And you're inserted into the variation of the action with respect to the tetrad and with respect to the field to find your equations of motion. And what you'll find, amazingly, is that you can actually, by a redefinition of the field, a redefinition given by this relation, so 1 over gamma bar goes as 1 over sinh, you can show that the theory becomes equivalent to Einstein, which is just general relativity with a scalar field stress energy tensor, identically. Which was incredibly surprising, which is not. I didn't understand. That's, well, as a scalar field fluid. Yes. So there's no mass term here, so it's just like a kinetic term. And so you can think of it, I guess, as an energy density without pressure, if you want to think about it in terms of perfect fluid. Yes, and you got to my last slide, essentially. that's right. So the stiff equation of... let me just continue. You'll see what I mean later. The point is that you get a stress energy tensor that looks like a perfect, like a scalar tensor, like a scalar field here. And you have just a wave equation for the field. So you have some dynamics for the field, but it's not driven by a potential or by other kinetic terms. Yes? Do you mean it's just the Einstein tensor? Just without torsion, just the regular, just standard Einstein? Yes. You can couple matter to this, and that's what Simone and Victor are doing next. So I don't want to talk about that. Excuse me? Yes. That's surprising because we did not expect it. In fact, we found this redefinition, Abai found it first, and then I forgot about it, and then Steinhardt pointed out, it's like, did you realize that this is the same as, and that's why it's there. But it's very surprising, and the amazing part is that this whole fluid that you have here is not parity violating. So somehow GR knows how to protect itself from parity violation, at least when you don't have matter. If you have matter, then we'll see. But at least to linear ordering the curvature tensor, it seems very hard for you to be able to construct a theory that has the correct infrared behavior, and it's also parity violating. If you go to higher curvature. Anyway.
So I think coupling the matter with the fermionic coupling, this bosonic coupling.
Yes. I mean, in fact, Perez, Rovelli, and Friel and others have shown that if you just couple GR to fermions with this immersive term, then you indeed get torsion and some sort of parity violation. But anyway. Well, right. Yeah, and then you can also, it depends on how you couple the fermion field to. Oh, I see. But you get torsion. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Just because you have torsion, that's not necessarily imply that you're going to have parity violation. Yeah, that's right. Well, in any case, we're not really doing that here, so it doesn't really matter. All right. So now, what do you do with this? Well, you try to, you know, try to find cosmological solutions of some type or other types of solution. And it's obvious that in the limit as phi is a constant, you recover identically GR for any value of the constant. So GR is preserved in that sense. For any small value of the derivatives of this field, you also recover GR identically. It's also trivial. What we looked at in particular, since this looks a lot like an inflaton, was, to us at least, was to set a cosmological solution. So we assumed we had a flat FRW line element with some scale factor, some Hubble parameter H, and we neglected any back reaction of this field back onto the metric, just so we treated, you know, the evolution of this field as you know, propagating in this, you know, fixed background. And for simplicity, we assumed that the Barberian mixture parameter was homogeneous and isotropic, so it respected the symmetries of the background. What?
Sorry.
Yeah. Because we didn't know we were going to get this to begin with.
No, once you have got this, then you know it's just going to go as 1 over 8 to the power 6 because the usual power law of behavior and it has nothing to do with
inflation. Let me continue.
Yeah. No, there must be something that I'm missing. That's what I'm missing.
No, let him continue.
But what was happening is this connection. In the beginning, there was another field. Okay, so what happened to that?
This field? F is a curvature tensor.
Right. So where is it now?
Define the curvature of Einstein.
No, this is Einstein's tensor of...
So this term arises because of the antisymmetric part of the connection. This term, this Tmu nu, arises because of the non-vanishing torsion that you get here. If this torsion tensor were, I mean, you're right. When you take the curvature tensor, you can split it into the Einstein piece, which is symmetric plus an antisymmetric piece. The antisymmetric piece combines into something I call Tmu nu, which looks like that. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. And you can, yeah, argue whether it's interesting or boring later. So anyway, so you looked at this, and you have some experience with cosmology, then you do what Baran said, and it's like, oh, well, the solution is this. You know, it's a stiff equation of state. Indeed, we went through the exercise of calculating the Friedmann equations. This is one of the Friedmann equations, and the other one's not modified. And you can solve them. This is the equation of motion. So you have three equations. You have two Friedmann equations and the equation of motion for the new field. So you have three equations that are coupled. You solve them. You find something that looks like a matter-dominated cosmology and some evolution equation for gamma bar, which has some interesting properties. As Param said, when you make an analogy with a perfect fluid, this is like a pressureless fluid with no mass. So it's like a stiff equation of state, omega equal 1, which gives you precisely that functional dependence for the scale factor. The BI parameter has a very interesting behavior that, you know, essentially tends to zero as t goes to t naught and also to zero as t goes to infinity because of this structure. So one thing you realize is you don't recover the Barberian mixture parameter that we know of. You don't go to the black hole value. If you added a potential to drive it there, then of course you could do that, but that's not what we did here. Yes. No, sorry. It's massless. Typo. Yeah, because otherwise somebody would be zero. Anyway, so you don't recover the behavior of the BI parameter that you would expect near a black hole. These are cosmological solutions, so if you put in a potential, it's possible you'll get something like that. But now if of course, you know, this goes back to the fact that it's not, the pressure is not zero. You can just make an analogy between, again, between a perfect fluid and this stress energy tensor and just compute what W is, which is P over rho. You get exactly that. which in some limit, so for small gamma dot, if you assume that these partials vanish because the field is isotropic and homogeneous, for instance, then you just get one. But if you assume that this is small, then you also get one minus small corrections. But in the limit as the field is time independent, and you get identically minus one. But that's ad hoc, right? Why would you make the field just not time dependent, just purely spatially dependent? I don't know, but it's just an observation. What about a different route? Can you get some sort of k-inflation here? Because the structure of this is reminiscent to a k-inflationary correction to the action. You have some non-trivial function that's multiplying some quadratic term, some quadratic kinetic term. And under field redefinition, you can show that this is just identical to a canonical term. But the point is that if you have a UV completion, by which I mean if you have some Riemann curvature term that you need to add to the action in the first place, that Riemann curvature term is going to contain pieces that go as the torsion squared, and those torsion squared pieces are going to lead to quartic kinetic pieces. Those quartic kinetic pieces now cannot be removed via field redefinition, and you have something analogous to the functional form of k-inflation. It does not mean you have k-inflation, it just means that you have something you can play with. And you can then try to determine what functional form of gamma would be necessary to reproduce the inflationary properties. That's something we didn't do, because we didn't know how to UV complete a host gravity. We didn't know what higher curvature terms to add. But again, this is just an observation. And the point was that this non-trivial k-inflation can be generated even when gamma bar depends only on time. So the interesting fact that came out of this analysis was that when you take modified Hall's gravity with a Barberi-Mirsky parameter that's not a parameter, it's a field, you recover GR in the presence of a massless scalar field. This could be thought of as a natural relaxation mechanism for the Barberi-Mirsky parameter. Maybe you start with some generic initial conditions for the Barberi-Mirsky parameter, and then because of the action of some potential, this parameter is driven to its black hole value somewhere. Could you construct inflationary solutions? Well, I have to say that right now, the way we looked at it, no. You need to add other ad hoc things in order to have inflation. So just promoting this field or this parameter to a field is not sufficient. But this does open door to a lot of other possible investigations regarding the role of this, for example, of this scalar field in superinflation, which is something Abhay mentioned last week, for example. To be more specific, I think, to just reiterate what you said a while ago on one of the ILQG seminars, you could think of this field as a natural clock with which you could measure the number of effaults you're in superinflation. And because of this non-trivial structure of the field that looks as 1 over sinh or something like that, it's possible that the predictions that we have right now for superinflations might be modified in some way. I don't know if I quoted you there.
I was much more conservative. It's a natural clock.
So I'll conclude there. Thank you. It's not a property of theories with torsion. Because Chern-Simons gravity, which is something else I've been looking at recently, is also a theory with torsion, but you don't get this stress-energy tensor. It's always true that when you start with an action that generalizes the Einstein action, you will most probably get torsion. You have to have something very specific to not get torsion. At least in my experience, every single time you look at this, then you end up getting some antisymmetric piece of the connection. Now, what is also true is that antisymmetric piece can be combined or can be rewritten as the Einstein tensor plus something else. and that something else can be moved to the right-hand side of the equation, and they say, oh, well, that's stress-energy tensor. So in that sense, yes, every time you have torsion, you'll have a stress-energy tensor. But it's not necessarily true that that stress-energy tensor is going to look like a matter source. It will have curvature terms in general. So in this case, that doesn't happen. So this is very specific to the type of torsion you get when you, you know, scalarize the Barbieri-Mirsky problem. As I said, this piece can be written as combinations of the contortion and covariant derivatives of the contortion. That's what Andy say. But if the contortion depends on the dual Riemann, like it does in Chern-Simons gravity, then the interpretation of that stuff as matter is not straightforward because it depends on the curvature. So you would think it should be on the left-hand side of the equation. Absolutely right.
Just one comment about this. Things more complicated than that because you're just assuming the relation between mechanical variables and magnetic variables, standard one, but that is kind of coupling. The momentum will depend on the scalar field in this case. So the relation between entropy and area will involve
This has been treated as an effective classical theory. This has not been quantized. You have to look at, if I remember correctly, the counter terms that would arise due to boundary conditions, so the Hawking-Gibbons term and things like that. Is that what you're saying?
It's a much more simple point. The simple point is that if you can take the connections, you configure it, but you just have to look at the canonically conjugate momentum. The triads are not canonically conjugate.
I've never done that calculation.
So I think that idea can be taken over here. But on the other hand, I'm not saying it. So it's not clear that we shouldn't just reinforce what Alex is saying. That the issue is more subtle. I mean, it's not that this gamma has to go to that value. Now, this theory works about that, but that's what you're calculating. And that is somewhat different.
Yeah, you're right. You're both right. No. What extra? Nothing, because a black hole has no hair. Scalar hair. Okay. So it propagates away.
Every solution of Einstein's equation, solution of this theory, is phi for the constant.
But even when phi is not a constant, black hole solutions just go through because black scalar fields just propagate away from the black hole. And there are no hair theorems. So.
Is actually gamma field of certain time, which is not constant.
Mm-hmm.
Then there would be, on the other hand, we need this phi. I mean, gamma is not equal to zero for us.
Right.
So would there even be solutions in that case? I mean, we know that every solution of Einstein's equation is a solution of this
right.
Gamma. But if we really found some gamma, which is a field, which you are believing, which has this potential.
Would that generate new solutions, something like that? Yeah, not studied yet. Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, because I mean, if you want the next black hole entropy calculation, you have to tell what a black hole even is when you have this gamma.
Yeah, I don't think the issue of new solutions has been studied in the presence of a non trivial gamma field.
But I think, this is a side of my head. For the entropy calculation, probably you don't need too much. Because you just need an isolated horizon, so that's the reason why we put 2 into the zero count value.
Obvious from the beginning.